Welcome to Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This series of 15 podcasts is called Managing Professionals: Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. It's designed to help people who have the responsibility for managing a group of professionals. This 14th episode is called You Cannot Manage Through Pay Schemes, and is based in part on material in my book, True Professionalism. In previous episodes, we've discussed the manager's role and characteristics, and a number of issues in managing individuals and forming teams. As we head into the home stretch in this series, I'm going to talk about a common mistake, the belief that you can manage through compensation schemes. Firms in every profession spend a lot of time trying to design ever more sophisticated pay-for-performance schemes, trying to get people to do things by putting the right incentives in place. However, the truth about pay-for-performance compensation systems is that they provide a wonderful excuse not to manage. If someone's performance is down, instead of management seeing that there's an obligation and an opportunity to go help that person, instead, they have a wonderful cop-out. They say, well, we evaluated him or her, we cut his pay, we've done our job, the rest is up to him or her. Contrast this what would happen in a system where every person got a relatively fixed share of the profits and in which changed as you moved up in your seniority if you survived. The clause, if you survived, is critical here because of the special way such firms respond to performance issues. In such a system, often called a lockstep system because people move in lockstep up the pay scale, if someone underperforms, you have only two choices. You either A, work with that person and help them improve to deserve their share of the pay, or B, if you cannot restore them to their full share performance, then you have to ask them to leave. Notice that having the lockstep system without the guts to deal with performance issues is clearly a disaster. When a firm with an intolerant lockstep approach to performance review brings someone in, the firm is actually making a commitment to help the individual perform to the firm's expectations or standards. These firms commit the resources to manage individuals in achieving their goals. Contrast this with what is happening in pay-for-performance firms. If you've lived for the past 20 years in a performance-based system, which is usually based upon individual pay and individual numbers, then by definition, you will have no institutional loyalty. The system has said to you for the past 20 years, the heck with the firm or with your group, you'll be paid on what you do. We've got this individual pay-for-performance system. We neither require of you to have any loyalty, nor do we give you any loyalty, because if your numbers are down, we cut your pay. So the individual pay system is designed to minimize firm cohesion and thereby create the sort of jumping ship syndrome that you see all over the world in different professional firms. However, if you've lived for the last 20 years in a firm where we've all been in the same boat together, we all rise and fall based upon overall firm-wide success, firm-wide profitability, I'm not so idealistic as to believe that no one will leave, but the probability that people will stay together and help each other through a downtime or a recession is observably higher because they've lived through the 20 years and are all in this thing together. The reason why there's so much jumping ship going on in most professions is that we have gone out of our way to say, you are on your own. Never forget that. That's the message that every professional in the majority of firms gets from their management. So the compensation system is the thing driving mobility. Compensation systems that are based on eating what you kill are really pulling firms apart. The other virtue that you get if you're prepared to make it a well-managed, intolerant lockstep firm is that if you have a managed lockstep system, you get fewer departures. Now, many European countries, unfortunately, had two historical traditions, unfortunate in combination. One was that there was a tradition of lockstep compensation. Eat what you kill is not that common in Europe, or at least was not historically. Unfortunately, they also had a social tradition of being tolerant. They were collegial. It meant you leave me alone about my flaws and I'll leave you alone about yours. We only tackle problems when they turn into true egregious disasters. The combination of these two flaws in the system can actually be disastrous. It means that everyone gets a relatively similar share of the profits, regardless of how they perform. So, 15 or 20 years ago, professional firms began to realize that they had to make a decision in order to remain successful. They either had to depart from tolerant lockstep by starting to manage their people, going from being tolerant to intolerant, actively managing, or they had to start dropping the lockstep and introduce pay for performance so that they wouldn't have to manage, but they could respond to performance differences solely through pay. The bad news, of course, is that the one thing most managers hate to do in the world is to actually manage. So instead of doing the sensible choice, which would be to move towards an intolerant, managed, lockstep system, what they decided to do was go the other way and remain tolerant, remain relatively unmanaged, and switch to pay for performance. As I noted before, compensation as an incentive scheme is a cop-out or it's a crutch, just an excuse for not providing proper management. There are two ways to assess the effectiveness of a compensation scheme. First, is the money ending up going to the right people? And second, what is the compensation process doing to create the desired behaviors and prevent the bad behaviors? A compensation system is and must always be a reward system in the sense of paying those that have done well. I'm not arguing in this podcast that everybody, in fact, must get the right same pay. What I'm arguing is the difference between having a reward scheme and going out of your way to design an incentive scheme that explicitly says, if you do this, we'll pay you. Most systems today end up paying the right people. That's usually not the problem in what's going on. The cash is going to the high performers. However, since the design of the system also influences how people behave, then it significantly influences what aspects of performance they pay attention to. You have to ask yourself whether your system is getting people to do the right things. Most are not. Anytime you try to use a compensation scheme as an incentive system, I promise you it will backfire. The minute you tell a bright person which three things will be in the incentive scheme, which ones will be rewarded, you by definition automatically give them permission to ignore the 97 other things they need to be doing to make the firm work. People like specificity, and they will always pressure you to say, which three things do I have to do to get a great bonus? But you must never answer that question. You must always say, gee, I don't know, and if I knew, I certainly wouldn't tell you because it will make you unmanageable on other important things. The process you must put in place is one where you say, we'll play fair. If you want to discuss the broad categories of performance, if you want to discuss at any time during the year how well you are doing, we will sit down with you and have performance counseling discussions, and that at various stages in the year, we will be honest about your performance, but we will never sit down and say it's a formula. It must be and always will be a judgment system. In running a compensation system, you must be generous and fair, but you must never reduce the compensation system to that formula based upon a limited number of things. Unfortunately, that is exactly what happens in many professional firms, where everyone knows that the compensation system is driven by simple things like billings and business origination, and that, unfortunately, fails to give you the permission to deal with partners or senior professionals who are acting like ugly human beings, but no one can do anything about it because it's not in the pay scheme. The problem is that firms are trying to use compensation as a means of raising performance, which it's not well equipped to do. Most compensation schemes in professional firms are basically saying, if you succeed, we will pay you. Now, this is a wonderful system for somebody who is already a natural superstar and knows how to win. But in a sense, a system like that, if you win, we'll pay you, is unneeded as an incentive for the superstar. It doesn't add anything to the success of the person or to the success of the firm because the superstar is going to win anyway. It doesn't raise performance. For someone who's not a superstar, someone who doesn't know how to win, someone who doesn't know how to develop business, someone who doesn't know how to delegate, doesn't know how to get organized, then just saying to them, well, I'll pay you if you figure it out, I'll pay you if you do it, is not exactly designed to be particularly productive. For the person who doesn't know how to raise his or her performance, changing the incentive won't actually help. And what about the person who underperforms? Is cutting their pay really the right way to energize them to perform better? If you really want to raise firm profits by increasing performance, then what you must do is what we've been discussing in these podcasts, and that's actually manage people. And that involves one-on-one interactions. Talk to people and help them raise their game by encouraging them, challenging them, exciting them, lift their enthusiasm, and help them deal with their issues. If you don't have the guts or the power to manage, or you just don't want to do it, then you will be forced to do what many professional firms are doing. They leave their people alone for a year and just throw a number at them at the end of the year. The number they come up with might be a valid number in the sense of they are rewarding the right people, but it's just a number tossed over the transom that says, here's what we think of you, figure it out. That system is not a method designed to raise performance. You might be rewarding it, you are not raising it. Another common flaw in compensation systems is that they are heavily dependent upon formal, structured performance appraisal schemes. Now, we discussed earlier in these podcasts the fact that formal performance appraisals are entirely useless as a method of raising performance. I gave the example previously of my own experience, which I will risk repeating here. Like many people, I am uncomfortable giving people critiques face-to-face in real time. My business manager, who was basically terrific, but in the early years of working together, when she made a few mistakes, I preferred to put it off until her performance evaluation at the end of the year. Which meant that, as I said earlier in the series, I was giving her performance feedback on multiple issues, all at once, which was bad, many months after the events occurred, which was worse, and right at the time when it influenced her pay. Disastrous. This is not an approach designed to make her receptive to critique. When given criticism at the time when it will influence their pay, people are more apt to fight back. Even when they know it's constructive criticism, they cannot concede the point because it'll affect their pay rise. Usually they can't afford that, so they're not open to constructive feedback. Since we are dealing with very smart people who can reconstruct history and prove that everything that happened was somebody else's fault and not theirs, we're not going to make very much progress through formal systems. Now, obviously, the goal is not to pay people less. The goal here is to get people to perform at such a level that we can afford to pay them more. That's the win-win that is in everybody's interest. So the challenge should be not how do we reward the right people. The challenge is how do we raise everybody's game. The focus should no longer be on the performance review. A totally different question should be asked when we sit down with people. The questions we should be asking is, how do you get people to be willing and able to improve and contribute more? The answer should be fairly clear. As the manager, you must have the courage. At the moment you see something that could be done better, you have the courage to walk down the corridor and speak with the individual about how things could be improved, even if they're doing really well now. If it can be improved, you need to have the guts and go have that conversation. You can't wait until it's slipped to disaster before you talk to people. You must go to the individual when it has nothing to do with pay and say, you know, I think this could be done differently. I think you can achieve more. Can we talk about this? When it has nothing to do with pay, most people will be enough of a professional to say, sure, let's talk about it. In a typical professional firm, management committees spend many months on compensation decisions. If the committee spent as much time talking to their people during the year as they do sitting in a room making compensation decisions, they would make a heck of a lot more money. Many firms in today's difficult business environment are organized into practice groups or profit centers. So if the firm wants to change its compensation scheme, what can they do to begin to get away from relying on incentive pay? If you're organized into practice groups, the key is the role of the group leader, and I do think there are some changes here which are worth considering. There is one very simple system that actually would help immensely. Say to the group leaders, your performance appraisal and your pay will be based upon how well your group succeeds. Your own individual numbers will be deemed irrelevant. We only care how much your group bills, not your personal billings, or how much your group generated in new business, not how much you did, or what your group's client satisfaction was, not yours. The incentive for the group leader is to say, okay, now my job is to help other people succeed. I can only get paid if the team becomes an effective functional unit. Anyone in trouble gets helped because I have to help that person succeed in order to get paid myself. Such systems for group leaders, paying the manager on how well the group functions, are what exists in virtually every other industry and profession, except in professional firms. It's still the case in most professional environments that we form groups and say to the team leader, we want you to manage the group, but by the way, you'll still be evaluated on your personal numbers. This is completely nonsensical. It's designed to have no management in the system. Another way of saying this is to say professional firms are very good at demanding that people succeed, but are pathetically useless at helping people succeed. Alfie Kohn has a wonderful phrase in his book, Punished by Rewards. And his phrase is, pay people well and then do everything you can to get them to forget about the money. In my last book, Practice What You Preach, based on the study of 139 professional firms in 13 countries, I was able to prove the following. First, and probably obvious, if you want to make the most money, then the best thing to do is provide outstanding value to the marketplace. However, I was also able to prove that in order to provide outstanding value, you must be able to energize, excite, and enthuse your people. You cannot provide superior value with good citizens. You can only provide superior value by people who are turned on. Finally, I was able to prove that turning people on had nothing to do with systems, nothing to do with strategies, and here comes the point for this particular episode, nothing to do with pay schemes. What it had everything to do with the character and skill of the individual managers, which is why we have this podcast series. You can take the same group of partners or professionals, the same market conditions, and if you put in place somebody who knows how to manage and energize people, then you can create superior financial reserves. If you take the same people in the same market conditions and put in a bad manager, those people will accomplish less because they will go into compliance mode. The important lesson here is that successful firms treat money as an outcome, not as a goal. The way you make the most money is by focusing on the things that create the money, which is client service, energy, and teamwork. Chasing money is not what makes you the money. If you want more money, you have to spend more time managing the causes of it. That is not what most professional firm managers or managing committees do. They manage the money and design compensation schemes which focus on the money. They spend time looking at billable hours and accounts receivables and origination credits. It's like playing a sports game with your eye firmly fixed on the scoreboard. And if you don't like what's on the scoreboard, you turn around to the players and say, I'll pay you more if the scoreboard changes. The question to management should be, do you know how to change the performance? I'm simply saying that professionals think that pay schemes can accomplish things that they cannot. You cannot manage an organization simply through a pay scheme. It's limited in what it can accomplish. Let me give you a final, perhaps silly, non-business story from Alfie Kohn's book, Punished by Rewards. He says all incentive systems ultimately backfire because they divert attention from the performance to the pay. He reports an experiment that was done with children. They brought them in and they divided the children into two groups and gave them some toys to play with. One group was just given the toys to play with, and the other group was rewarded, paid with sweets and candy to play with the toys. After a while, they stopped paying, and the children who were playing with the toys for the fun of it carried merrily on. The ones that were being rewarded for playing with the toys immediately stopped. Their attention had been diverted from the meaning and the fun of the task to doing it only for the money. The minute you create a culture that sends off the signal, it's about the money, stupid, it turns out that the people will do what it is you do less well. Instead of working for meaning, challenge, or excitement, people now will focus on the money, and they're doing it only for the money, and they will do it less well. If you really want to improve performance while maximizing growth for your money, then you have to help people find the meaning and challenge in what they do for a living. If you have to resort to paying people to perform specific tasks, you are going to breed a cynicism about the work, which will result in you earning less money. This has been You Cannot Manage Through Pay Schemes, the 14th episode in my 15-part series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, Behaviors. In the last episode, we will review and summarize the series and point the way to additional topics worth discussing. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.